it's another Sunday afternoon and a beautiful day here in the Paris of the South. It's time for Wordplay, and I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Today we've got another very special show, one that features poet Mark Strand reading here in Asheville back in September. Before we get to that reading, though, here's Strand reading some earlier work at George Mason University in 2007.
I'll begin with one of the earliest poems of mine. It's called What to Think Of. There occurs in this poem the name of a butterfly called the Morpho butterfly, which is, I'm sure you've seen photographs of it. It's a very bright, iridescent blue butterfly, and they're found in huge numbers in Brazil, where I had spent a year as a Fulbright lecturer. What to think of? Think of the jungle, the green steam rising. It is yours. You are the Prince of Paraguay. Your minions kneel deep in the shade of giant leaves. While you drive by, benevolent as gold, they kiss the air the moments before swept over your skin and rise only after you've passed. Think of yourself almost a god, your hair on fire, the bellows of your heart pumping. Think of the bats rushing out of their caves like a dark wind to greet you. Of the vast nocturnal cities of lightning bugs floating down from Minas Gerais, of the coral snakes, of the crimson birds with emerald beaks, of the tons and tons of morpho butterflies filling the air like the cold confetti of paradise. Somebody mentioned earlier the only poem of mine she had read called Eating Poetry. I'll read that. Ink runs from the corners of my mouth. There is no happiness like mine. I have been eating poetry. The librarian does not believe what she sees. Her eyes are sad, and she walks with her hands in her dress. The poems are gone. The light is dim. The dogs are on the basement stairs and coming up. Their eyeballs roll. Their blonde legs burn like brush. The poor librarian begins to stamp her feet and weep. She does not understand. When I get on my knees and lick her hand, she screams. I am a new man. I snarl at her and bark. I romp with joy in the bookish dark. Well, I'm moving up in time, out of my 20s. Into my 30s, where I am now. Somebody asked me how old I was, and I said, 42. But I left my face in the dryer too long. Breath. When you see them, tell them I am still here, that I stand on one leg while the other one dreams, that this is the only way, that the lies I tell them are different from the lies I tell myself, that by being both here and beyond, I am becoming a horizon, that as the sun rises and sets, I know my place. The breath is what saves me. that even the forced syllables of decline are breath, that if the body is a coffin, it is also a closet of breath, that breath is a mirror clouded by words, that breath is all that survives the cry for help as it enters the stranger's ear and stays long after the word is gone, that breath is the beginning again, that from it all resistance falls away as meaning falls away from life, or darkness falls from light. The breath is what I give them when I send my love. Moving along. Skipping a lot here. The coming of light. Even this late it happens, the coming of love, the coming of light. You wake, and the candles are lit as if by themselves. Stars gather, dreams pour into your pillows, sending up warm bouquets of air. Even this late, the bones of the body shine, and tomorrow's dust flares into breath. I'm still in my 30s here. My son, my only son, the one I never had, would be a man today. He moves in the wind, fleshless, nameless. Sometimes he comes and leans his head, lighter than air, against my shoulder. And I ask him, son, where do you stay? Where do you hide? And he answers me with a cold breath. You never noticed, though I called and called and keep on calling from a place beyond love, where nothing, everything wants to be born. Now we're moving up. Fiction. I think of the innocent lives of people in novels who know they'll die, but not that the novel will end. How different they are from us. Here the moon stares dumbly down through scattered clouds onto the sleeping town, and the wind rounds up the fallen leaves, and somebody, namely me, deep in his chair, riffles the pages left, knowing there's not much time for the man and woman in the rented room, for the red light over the door, for the iris tossing its shadow against the wall, not much time for the soldiers under the trees that line the river, for the wounded being hauled away to the cities of the interior where they will stay. The war that raged for years will come to a close, and so will everything else, except for a presence hard to define, a trace like the scent of grass after a night of rain, or the remains of a voice that lets us know, without spelling it out, not to despair. If the end has come, it too will pass. Always. There's a poem by Apollinaire called Toujours, in which he asks who the Christopher Columbus of forgetting will be. Who will be the first man to forget a continent? I was very attracted to the idea and so wrote a poem in response called Always. Always so late in the day, in their rumpled clothes, sitting around a table lit by a single bulb, the great forgetters were hard at work. They tilted their heads to one side, closing their eyes. Then a house disappeared, and a man in his yard with all his flowers in a row. The great forgetters wrinkled their brows. Then Florida went, and San Francisco, where tugs and barges leave small gleaming scars across the bay. One of the great forgetters struck a match. Gone were the harps of beaded lights that vault the rivers of New York. Another filled his glass, and that was it for crowds at evening under sulfur yellow street lamps coming on. And afterwards, Bulgaria was gone, and then Japan. Where will it stop? One of them said. Such difficult work, pursuing the fate of everything known, said another. Down to the last stone, said a third. And only the cold zero of perfection left for the imagination. And gone were North and South America, and gone as well the moon. Another yawned, another gazed at the window. No grass, no trees, the blaze of promise everywhere. One winter night, I showed up at a party of Hollywood stars who milled about, quoted their memoirs, and drank. The prettiest one stepped out of her dress, fell to her knees, and said that only her husband had glimpsed the shadowy flower of her pudendum, and he was a prince. A slip of sunlight rode the swell of her breasts into the blinding links of her necklace and crashed. Out on the lawn, the platters were singing twilight time. Heavenly shades of night are falling. This was a dream. Later, I went to the window and gazed at a bull, huge and pink, in a field of snow. Moonlight poured down his back, and the damp of his breath spread until he was wreathed in a silver steam. When he lifted his head and loosed a bellow that broke and rolled like thunder in the rooms below, this too was a dream.
You're listening to Wordplay on WPVM 103.5 in Asheville, North Carolina, a broadcast service of the Mountain Area Information Network. And we're back again in the studio. And that was Mark Strand reading at George Mason University in 2007, giving a kind of chronological view of his work. If you don't know Mark Strand's work, do check it out. He's, of course, a former poet laureate. I've known his work since 1964, I think, with Sleeping with One Eye Open and Reasons for Moving, those early wonderful works. He's won multitudes of awards, the MacArthur Fellowship, Rockefeller Foundation Awards, the Bollingen Prize, you name it. And does really interesting stuff. And he was here to support a really interesting project, too, called River Sculpture. And I've got Robert and Arlene Winkler here to talk about that. Tell us a little bit about river sculpture. What is river sculpture?
Well, in simplest form, river sculpture is an annual sculpture exhibition in Asheville that draws, at this point, from five states, North and South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, and Georgia. We have 34 sculptures by 27 artists. Mm-hmm. The concentration is in this area, mostly because of logistics. Probably about two-thirds of it is Western North Carolina, and then the one-third is from the other bordering states. Uh-huh. And it's work in a variety of media. There's metal, wood, stone. We have one piece this year that is a bamboo walkway that was designed to be totally green and built by AB Tech's construction classes. They actually went out and did their class on site for 2 weeks. And what we do is build in a lot of performances. There are dancers that dance and incorporate the sculpture in the dance. There's theater, there's music, and all of it is to show the connections between sculpture and the other art forms along the lines of what was done at Black Mountain College.
Yeah, the collaboration was the heart of that. Yeah. I noticed you had Sylvie, who are wonderful. I love their work. They're the combination of music and dance. Mm-hmm. And they are straight out of Black Mountain College, of course, as well, out of John Cage's work, I guess, and Cunningham. But yeah, interesting work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what brought you into this? What got you involved in
this?
Well,
I am a sculptor.
Uh-huh.
And somebody asked me once if I've always done this, and I said, no, I got a late start when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always done it, and we're from New York, and although I grew up in Cleveland, and when we were looking to leave, what we were my friend refers to as when the noise in your head gets louder than the noise in the street, it's time to leave. And we hit that point, and we said, well, where can we move? And we've lived in a number of American cities, and to be honest, they all look like the same polo shirt to me. Mm-hmm. And a friend invited us to Asheville.
Oh, wait, you left out the good part. We were about to move to France.
Oh, about to move to France.
Yes.
Wow.
We were going to move to Burgundy.
Uh-huh.
And we were really set to go. And then we had this last minute, what if? What if it doesn't work out?
Yeah.
What if the French won't let us stay?
Yeah.
What if we have a falling out with the people that we're going to partner with?
Yeah.
And then this friend in Asheville said, you know, come visit.
Come visit us.
And we thought, at least we need a fallback city.
Yeah.
Because we won't be able to go back to New York.
Yeah.
So we came back here 5 times, and on the 5th visit, bought a house.
I know many people who have moved to Asheville because they came to visit someone, and yeah.
Oh, since then, I've met hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And no sooner did we move here than it began to snow. Here I had thought we had moved to the south.
Yeah, right.
And within a week, we got a call from our neighbor across the street who said, Arlene, have you looked out the window? I said, yes, it's snowing. She said, no, Arlene, 3 of your trees have fallen down.
Oh.
Now, nobody has ever said anything like that to me in my life.
That's something you have to worry about in New York, yeah. I guess. Right.
No.
So we bought a saw and a pickup truck.
There you go. You are local.
No, yeah.
Almost.
Almost. But when you get your pickup truck, you're pretty close.
I think the chainsaw was the clincher
there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it was interesting. And then what happened is, you know, Asheville has a reputation as an arts destination.
Yeah.
And but we looked around, and I met sculptors here. I met some very, very talented people who had no opportunity to show their work in their hometown.
Yeah.
There's a great deal of talent in Western North Carolina, and obviously my passion is sculpture. And we began or helped found a sculptors organization and started looking around for a way to create a sculpture park, mm-hmm. And ideally a permanent park that would have a permanent collection and rotating exhibits, etc. And the opportunity to do river sculpture, I kind of I wouldn't say fell in our lap because it's 3.5 years of campaigning for it. But one day Arlene was interviewing Terry Bellamy for a newspaper article.
Uh-huh. Right.
And the short of it was, she said, let's just make it happen.
Terry Bellamy said to me, I'm going to become known as the art mayor. I was just about leaving when she said that. Huh. I turned around and sat right back down in my chair, of course, and told her about our idea. And within weeks, we were on our way.
She's a remarkable figure. She really is. She's been very supportive of the arts.
Yes.
And we had a poetry festival this past spring, and she was there. I mean, and she read a poem.
Did she?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. There are not many cities where the mayor would get up and read a poem at a poetry festival.
No. And all art events need a champion.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She certainly was that for us.
Yeah.
We got a phone call about 2 weeks later from Parks and Rec, and they said, Mayor wants us to do this.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do? And it was kind of funny because it started out as the first meeting, which was with David Mitchell, who was former superintendent of cultural affairs.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, we want to do a large-scale sculpture event over a weekend. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you can't. Again, you're talking about it takes a weekend just for people to bring the work in. And so they committed to a month. They wanted to do it in French Broad River Park because it was underutilized at that time. This is mm-hmm. 3 years ago.
Right.
They wanted to draw attention to it. They wanted to do something in the fall between the summer and the leaf season.
Mm-hmm.
And in conversations with Jeff York, who at the time ran public art for the North Carolina Arts Council, so you can't do it for months. You've got to do it for at least 2 months. So mm-hmm. it grew. But it didn't start until late March that year. And we were flat out trying to get it open for September 1st. It's a very, very short time frame to put something together. But we did.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very successful. There was a problem with the floodplain, and they didn't get the proper permits, so half of the show, after 30 days, had to move to City County Plaza
uh-huh.
for another 60 days, which for us was great, because a lot of people saw it that would not have gone to the park.
Right.
The second year, it was bigger, the work was better, we had a lot more work,
mm-hmm.
And it was very, very popular. We mm-hmm. had people from all over the country, all over North Carolina came to visit it. We're getting phone calls. You know, we're bringing a busload down from Gatlinburg. How do we get there?
Mm-hmm.
Which one of the problems with French Broad River Park is it was hard to tell people how to get there.
Well, you take a right here and then hang a left.
There's no sign. Yeah. Watch for it.
Right.
I got a phone call one day that a woman called and asked if there was parking and if she could bring her dog. And I said, well, there's both. And I said, where are you coming from? Do you need directions? And she said, well, I'm coming from Kansas City, Missouri. And I said, well, you know, that's intentional. And she said, well, I'm interviewing for a job, and they told me I have to go see this while I'm here.
Yeah.
And we had a number of those experiences. We talked to a woman last year who had come down here for a weekend from Washington and was looking to move D.C.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And someone took her to the show at French Broad River Park, and her response was, if this is the kind of city that can do this, this is where I want to live. And she immediately started looking at homes.
Yeah.
And we met her at a party, and she'd just closed on a house.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of that. And then one of the things that happened was a major change in Parks and Recreation. Irby Brinson, who ran it for 31 years, won all the awards, et cetera, mm-hmm. left, mm-hmm. and so did all of his mid-level managers. And the third year, we had an agreement to do the exhibition in the park again, but we couldn't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get to an agreement. And finally, mid-July, we finally said, this won't work. We're out of time now.
Right.
And we made a decision, along with my working committee, and there's a 10-person working committee involved in it, to basically shut it down for this year.
Yeah.
And then we literally, with that night, got a phone call.
Mind you, we had done the call for and trees and the jurying already.
Yeah, we already had selected the work at that point. And it was just, it went on and on. And we finally said, look, we can't do this right if we don't have partners that are going to move forward with us. And Reynolds Mountain and Woodfin, actually it was Woodfin was leading it, called us the next day. And said, we will host it. And we've been talking to them because one of the things we wanted to be able to do this year was to have, we refer to them as satellite exhibitions, which is to take work from prior years and place a few pieces in Woodfin, a few pieces at AB Tech, a few pieces at Black Mountain. And Black Mountain, interestingly, said, you know, it's a terrific idea. We'll put together a group here, and we'll use Black Mountain sculptors exclusively. And we have some Black Mountain sculptors in the exhibition. And which is, to me, is great because we get what we want. We have the opportunity, only they're going to do all the work. we're still working with AB Tech, and hopefully by January we'll have some work up there. And then Woodfin became the home of the show. And one of the things that was tied into that is they are beginning, or will begin shortly, planning for a permanent sculpture park across Weaverville Highway from where it is now.
It won't be in the current
Where it is now is temporary. And this is just because the land was available and it's an opportunity to keep the exhibition alive, fulfill our commitments to the sculptors. And what we're beginning to do is plan for a permanent park. It'll be 20 to 30 acres between Weaverville Highway and the river.
They have been wonderful partners. They have been so supportive. Anytime we need something, it was, how soon do you need it? Not, no, we can't do that, or I'll get back to you. That never happened.
And even though we think of Woodfin as being, I mean, it's easy to get there.
I mean,
if you're telling somebody, giving somebody directions.
Just go out Merriman.
You go out Merriman Avenue. There it is.
Well, and in fact, since the new lights went in, there's a new road into Reynolds Mountain. And if you get off I-26, the future I-26, at exit 23, you literally just, at the bottom of the ramp, go across Weaverville Highway and right up the road. And you can actually see the first of the sculptures from Weaverville Highway. And like I said, then we will be shifting it to the other side of the road. And when we have the permanent park, which was the original objective, the idea of doing a 2 or 3 month rotating exhibit was the opportunity to begin the dialogue about it and show people what we were talking about.
And we hope, you know, that we'll have purchase awards and begin the permanent collection using some of the work that wins those awards. We hope we'll do some invitational pieces. And the future is looking very bright for that.
Well, great, great. Let's see if we can hear the reading that Mark Strand gave here in Asheville at the home of Ron and Nancy Edgerton back in September.
Thank you very much for all coming out, driving up the mountain. I want to thank Bob and Arlene and all of you who are responsible for bringing me here. Also, my old friend Betty Holden, who was so good to me when I was a struggling art student at Yale. Both Betty and Ben were really terrific. I mean, when is it that a student gets to spend the summer in the secretary of the university's house? They were enormously generous. I'd like to say a few things about river sculpture. I've heard about it from both Bob and Arlene, and it seems to me a very exciting project, has been, and I hope will continue to be. You know, art consciousness is not a frivolous, expendable community entertainment. It's one of the ways people can come together and pay attention, not just to what they're looking at, but pay attention to what they're thinking while they're looking at. And I think when you start thinking about what you're seeing, it's really the beginning of paying attention to what you're experiencing while you're alive. There are a lot of people who go through life and don't give it a second thought or hope that they don't. They fear complication. And then they wake up when they're 70 or 75 and they wonder, what have I done with it all? And a project like River Sculpture is important for a community because they can come together and pay attention. And you only have one life. I don't care what they say. You have one life, and it's best to pay attention because it goes by quicker than you know it. Okay, now I'm going to read a couple of poems because, after all, I'm a poet and not a speech giver. I'm going to, I thought I'd read first two poems that have to do with art. I'm not sure that all of you, although I'm sure that some of you are familiar with the paintings of Giorgio di Chirico, the great Italian surrealist whose great work was painted between 1911 and 1917, and whose works appear, you know, in all the major museums of this country and all over the world. Anyway, if you don't know di Chirico's work, he's the guy that paints those squares with the arches, and usually there's a little couple and they cast a long shadow. And in the Art Institute, there's a painting called The Philosopher's Conquest, where a bunch of bananas is on a crate, and there's a clock hand, and there's always a train running through these paintings, and a tower with flags. I'm not sure my description is going to ring any bells, but maybe my poems will. At any rate, by chance, two museums, each having a di Chirico in their collection, was asking a bunch of writers if they would write something about something in their collection. And I knew that each of these museums had a di Chirico, so I said, I'll do the di Chirico for the Art Institute of Chicago, and to the University of Iowa, I'll do your di Chirico. So I wrote these two poems pretty much at the same time. The first of them is called The Philosopher's Conquest, which I sort of described to you. It's the one in the Art Institute of Chicago. This melancholy moment will remain, so too the oracle beyond the gate, and always the tower, the boat, the distant train. Somewhere to the south, a duke is slain, a war is won. Here it is too late. This melancholy moment will remain. Here an evening without rain, two artichokes abandoned on a crate, and always the tower, the boat, the distant train. Is this another scene of childhood pain? Why do the clock hands say 1:28? This melancholy moment will remain. The green and yellow light of love's domain falls upon the joylessness of fate, and always the tower, the boat, the distant train. The things our vision wills us to contain, the life of objects, their unbearable weight, this melancholy moment will remain, and always the tower, the boat, the distant train. Now this one is called The Disquieting Muses. Well, I should say something about this because there are 19 of these paintings, each of them exactly the same. De Chirico painted one and sold it. Somebody saw that painting and wanted it and couldn't have it and went to De Chirico and said, I want you to paint another, which he did, exactly the same. And knowing that this could be done, others followed. So there are 19 of them, all exactly the same. Although my poem doesn't talk about the fact that they're so numerous, but it's the painting with those two dummies, you know, dressmaker's dummies, sort of leaning one way in a kind of reddened square. But anyhow, here's the poem. Boredom sets in first, and then despair. Uh-oh. Whoa. I'll start again. I didn't know poetry was so powerful. I know, isn't it great? I'll tell them my poem, Shatter Glass. Boredom sets in first and then despair. One tries to brush it off, it only grows. Something about the silence of the square. Something is wrong. Something about the air, its color, about the light, the way it glows. Boredom sets in first and then despair. The muses in their fluted evening wear their faces blank, might lead one to suppose something about the silence of the square, something about the building standing there, but no, they have no purpose but to pose. Boredom sets in first, and then despair. What happens after that? One doesn't care. What brought one here? The desire to compose something about the silence of the square, or something else of which one's not aware. Life itself, perhaps, who really knows? Boredom sets in first, and then despair, something about the silence of the square. Well, that's as much rhyme as you're going to be exposed to tonight. This is called Old Man Leaves Party, and you're not to think that it's me. And it's not to think that that's what's going to happen tonight. It was clear when I left the party that though I was over 80, I still had a beautiful body. The moon shone down as it will on moments of deep introspection. The wind held its breath. And look, somebody left a mirror leaning against a tree. Making sure that I was alone, I took off my shirt. The flowers of bare grass nodded their moon-washed heads. I took off my pants, and the magpies circled the redwoods. Down in the valley, the creaking river was flowing once more. How strange that I should stand in the wilds alone with my body. I know what you're thinking. I was like you once, but now, with so much before me, so many emerald trees and weed-whitened fields, mountains and lakes, how could I not be only myself, this dream of flesh from moment to moment? I'll just read a couple more of these poems. You know, I forgot to bring any books with me. It was so early in the morning. I only realized when I was at the airport, and I just hoped that somebody here had my book, and Betty had this one, so here. Oh, whoa! Great.
Thank you for being one of the old guys.
Well, you know, I'm one of you. But you're not that old. Give or take a dozen years. Well, I'll read a more recent poem. Elevator. This is a poem in two parts. One, the elevator went to the basement. The doors opened. A man stepped in and asked if I was going up. I'm going down, I said. I won't be going up. Two, the elevator went to the basement. The doors opened. A man stepped in and asked if I was going up. I'm going down, I said. I won't be going up. Well, you know, actually, as I've become a more serious poet as I've gotten older, but my poems have become a little less serious. I hope it'll change.
I hope you'll keep writing them. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, you never know. Somebody offered me a good job. Mother and son. The son enters the mother's room and stands by the bed where the mother lies. The son believes that she wants to tell him what he longs to hear, that he is her boy, always her boy. The son leans down to kiss the mother's lips, but her lips are cold. The burial of feelings has begun. The son touches the mother's hands one last time, then turns and sees the moon's full face. An ashen light falls across the floor. If the moon could speak, what would it say? If the moon could speak, it would say nothing. I'll read two more poems. This is called Mirror. It's self-explanatory. A white room and a party going on, and I was standing with some friends under a large gilt-framed mirror that tilted slightly forward over the fireplace. We were drinking whiskey, and some of us, feeling no pain, were trying to decide what precise shade of yellow the setting sun turned our drinks. I closed my eyes briefly, then looked up into the mirror. A woman in a green dress leaned against the far wall. She seemed distracted. The fingers of one hand fidgeted with her necklace, and she was staring into the mirror, not at me, but past me, into a space that might be filled by someone yet to arrive, who at that moment could be starting the journey which would lead eventually to her. Then, suddenly, my friends said it was time to move on. This was years ago, and though I have forgotten where we went and who we all were, I still recall that moment of looking up and seeing the woman stare past me into a place I could only imagine, and each time it is with a pang, as if just then I were stepping from the depths of the mirror. Wait, I forgot the end of the poem. Stepping from the depths of the mirror, into that white room, breathless and eager, only to discover too late that she is not there. Well, so sorry, I ruined my own poem. See, I haven't read it in a long time, so. Anyway, I'll read a short poem and that'll be enough, probably. Then you can start drinking again. This is called My Name. Once, when the lawn was a golden green and the marbled moonlit trees rose like fresh memorials in the scented air, and the whole countryside pulsed with the chirr and murmur of insects, I lay in the grass, feeling the great distances open above me, and wondered what I would become and where I would find myself. And though I barely existed, I felt for an instant that the vast, star-clustered sky was mine, and I heard my name as if for the first time, heard it the way one hears the wind or the rain, but faint and far off, as though it belonged not to me, but to the silence from which it had come and to which it would go. Thank you.
You're listening to Wordplay on WPVM 103.5 in Asheville, North Carolina, a broadcast service of the Mountain Area Information Network. That was poet Mark Strand reading here in Asheville at a benefit for River Sculpture, a project that he really appreciates and one that's very near and dear to the hearts of my guest in the studio today, Robert and Arlene Winkler. If you haven't caught River Sculpture yet, it's worth finding, and it's really easy to find now. You don't have to take a right and a left. You just head out Merriman Avenue, and
And watch for the signs on the right-hand side of the highway.
That's right. If you and head to Reynolds Mountain.
Yeah, and then there are maps and directions at our website, which is www.riversculpture.com.
Uh-huh.
And there's also some of the history of the exhibition, links to the artist sites, and photos of the pieces in the show. Mm-hmm. And when there are special events going on, they're also listed. Obviously, now it's a little too cold to get people to stand around and watch.
Right. I noticed you were having musicians and dancers in the park mm-hmm. performing with the pieces, as it were, early on. I guess that's off until spring?
This show opened on September 27th and is running through January 5th uh-huh. of this next year.
Right.
And there will probably be a special event between now and then, but we don't have anything scheduled at this time. But we are hoping to have something around the holidays.
Uh-huh.
And it'll open again next year, September 1st.
Right.
And during September and October, there are dance events, theater. The dancers, for instance, in August, pick the pieces that they want to perform to before they've been installed. They're working from photographs at that point mm-hmm. That the artists submit or drawings. And they do their choreography as they are inspired by the sculpture. And then, for instance, we'll have 20, sometimes more, dancers going around the park, different dancers doing the dances at different sculptures. Mm-hmm. And it goes on for a couple hours.
Even their costumes are designed to blend with or match or flow with the sculpture. This year there was a dancer in miles and miles, wrapped up almost like a cocoon. And she wrapped it around one of the sculptures and began to unwrap herself and wrap the sculpture. Everything is beautifully integrated.
Yeah, that sounds very nice.
Yes. And then last year, and we couldn't do it this year because of the schedule change, but Montford Park Players also perform. And last year they did a piece, it was Much Ado About Nothing, mm-hmm. by Shakespeare, and incorporated the torsos of one of the sculptures into the performance, so that if they had an aside and a soliloquy, they would actually speak it with the sculpture rather than one of the other characters. And that was a lot of fun. There's also sound sculptures. We didn't have one this year. And as I think I mentioned to you before, the location where it is this year is temporary. Next year, we'll move into a park across Weaverville Highway, between Weaverville Highway and the river.
Which will be somewhat more appropriate for the name River Sculpture.
Yeah. Well, we took a lot of abuse for that this year.
I bet.
And
not to add to it.
even though we had the Red Herring Puppets did a performance, and they incorporated the artwork into it, but they led off with, "And where's the river?" And when you see a little, 2 foot tall puppet saying that, it's kind of...
Well, in fact, the puppet unrolled the silver paper and said, "Here's the river."
Brought his own.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So you've got regional artists. You've got, do you have international artists, or is it mostly regional?
Not at this point. The long-term plan is we will have them.
Yeah.
We will have both a permanent collection and continuing rotating exhibitions,
right.
Possibly once it's up and running, not just River Sculpture, but other exhibitions during the year.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, we will be able to bring in international sculptors. Sculptors, we've had a number of inquiries this year from sculptors on the West Coast and also
New York State.
Missouri.
Yeah.
That want to be able to come here and do this. It's gaining a very, very good reputation.
Well, that's great.
And
it's really a unique project. I can't think of another quite like it anywhere. I mean, are there others?
There are others, nothing that builds in the same quantity of types of events.
Yeah.
There's one in Salisbury that I'll be in actually next spring, but it's maybe, I think, 8 sculptures around the town.
Right.
Chapel Hill does something like that. Nobody in this part of the country does anything with as much work.
Mm-hmm.
And with all of the other art forms incorporated into it.
It's the multidiscipline aspect that is really what is so unique about it.
I mean, Burning Man in the West is about the closest thing to it.
Right.
and it's very, very different.
Yes, right. And very temporary.
Yes, extremely temporary.
Well, it's interesting because it goes up in 2 weeks and comes down in a night.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
It. and this exhibition, what we have is probably about 3/4 of the submissions, 2/3 to 3/4, are existing pieces that were created within the last 3 years, and that's one of the restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And then about a third are proposals. Site-specific, that it's a juried exhibition, a 4-person jury, and they will submit drawings, explanations of the piece that they want to do, and they're juried the same way that existing pieces are juried, except that they have to show prior work so that we know that they can actually produce the piece.
Right.
And there were a number of those this year.
Uh-huh.
The work is becoming more conceptual. It's becoming more more creative.
Mm-hmm.
We have artists who have been in it the 2 prior years that are doing really new work.
Yeah,
and it's raising the bar.
Yeah, that's right. That's what exhibits like this do. I think they give the artist involved a community to work with.
Yeah.
And another thing it does is, and I just came back from upstate New York at another sculpture park where we are arranging to basically swap sculptors,
like an exchange.
That they'll have some from here,
uh-huh.
we'll have some of theirs, and what that does is create all kinds of opportunities for the regional sculptors. They get introduced to a whole new audience in upstate New York. They get invited to shows.
Yes.
So it's very, very good for the community.
Well, tell us one more time how folks can find out more about River Sculpture.
www.riversculpture.com.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you need to know is there.
Okay.
There's a map and links page, and the links connect to many of our supporters, and I encourage everybody to patronize them.
Of course.
We spend a lot of time raising money for River Sculpture, because one of the things about River Sculpture is each of the artists, actually each sculptor, receives a $500 stipend. To help cover the expense of bringing the work
good.
In.
Yeah, it's not easy to bring it in.
No, it's not.
So the bulk of the money we raise actually goes to the artists and to the performers are also paid a very ridiculously small stipend, but we feel it's a gesture of respect.
Well, that's good. That's good. So that's riversculpture.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, do check that out. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.